I hereby introduce to you, Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. This program is brought to you by the Amazing FBA Mentoring Program. The mentoring program is there for you, whether you are just starting out or you have an existing product and you want to add another product, or you want to scale up from a few thousand pounds or dollars per month up into the sort of $25,000 a month or so mark, at which point then I would probably hand you over to the 10K Collective Mastermind if you're in the UK. Is it for you if you're outside the UK? Absolutely. I've got an American client, a British client, weirdly, but who's in Australia. I've got an Australian client in London. I've worked with people in Poland and in Ireland. So it's pretty international. This works for everybody because everyone has similar issues. If you're selling in America, if you're selling in the UK or Europe, or you're planning to sell in UK, Europe or America, I've sold in all those marketplaces and coach people and all that. So all of those people will find that this is a very, very helpful program for them. Why one-to-one mentoring? It's pretty simple, really, because isolation is a dream killer. Trying to learn something just from the raw fire hose of YouTube and podcasts and Facebook groups is going to drive you nuts. But even if you've got the structured work of a course, which I definitely would recommend, I did that myself, and I work with people with my course now, I still think it's really, there's no substitute for being able to use somebody as a sounding board, and learning from somebody who's been there before can help you deal with the head trash and have clear, simple processes and hold you accountable to them. So if that sounds attractive to you, guess what? We've got an amazing deal. I very, very rarely reduce the price of my mentoring because I don't want to devalue it in the marketplace, but I'm doing it because I neglected my marketing before Christmas with the PLP, the private level process course I was creating, and I've got a tax bill coming up because I've had a successful year, but that unfortunately means I owe the government a lot of tax. So for those reasons, I need to get a cash influx, so I'm willing to lower my prices for the next three or four people. After that, it goes back to standard prices, and I will indeed put them up in future, as I have done in the past. So if you're interested in exploring that, it's application only. I'm not going to hard sell you into anything. If it's not right for you, we won't work together. But many, many people have found it very helpful. If you want to find out more about that and see some of the testimonials from the happy people that I've worked with, amazingfba.com/ mentoring, MENTORING. Thank you so much for listening. Now on with the show. Hello, ladles and jelly spoons. Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Michael Veazey. And today I want to address something that I think sounds and feels like it's for beginners. And actually, everybody I've ever met in business, but in life, needs to reflect on this very profound thought. And I don't claim to be some kind of genius that I've come up with this conceptually, but I've just noticed this pattern is incredibly prevalent with new Amazon sellers particularly, but it blocks everybody. And also there's a flip side to what blocks people is when we don't use a lot of stuff that could be serving us. We're talking about people's history and their relationship to other things, the history of their relationship to other things. What on earth does this mean? Let me explain. Well, for starters, I'm probably going to call this Amazon product research, when to dig deep and when to move on. And I've got to put some kind of SEO friendly, you know, search engine optimization, trying to rank for some keywords for things like Amazon product research. But the truth is, this is where it shows up the absolute most with people who are new sort of future entrepreneurs or wannapreneurs. And they can say wannabes forever, or they can become entrepreneurs in future. And one of the things that blocks people from going from one to the other is this whole thing. Now, what am I talking about? There are two concepts that I want to borrow from Seth Godin, who's a wonderful, wonderful, clear-minded business thinker, as well as a marketing guru, but very clear-minded. And one of the things he talks about is the sunk cost fallacy. And the other thing he talks about is the dip. And I want to explore those two concepts and how my personal take on how these emerge very naturally. This isn't just a concept-led thing. What I started with today is a phone call with somebody, or a mentoring call with one of my mentoring clients who's in the early stages. She's a future entrepreneur, let's say, and she doesn't yet have any products live, let alone any revenue, although she's got plenty of pretty clear ideas that I think actually are better formed than a lot of people's that I've worked with who are at the early stages. But there's just been this classic kind of dynamic going on that we've been working to coach her through for the last week or two. And I really want to address this because it was a fascinating call today, and it was really striking the two sides of this flip side. So The examples from this first client, and I'm obviously going to change the names to protect the innocent, so I'm never going to reveal a client's exact product or product niche online, because that would be inviting, you know, the competition to have a party, and I would never do that. So these are not the actual product niches, but these are examples that are similar. So the first thing that my client and I were exploring that she's got as an idea, by the way, she's based in America. It's just, I should say this, so it's not all about UK-based clients. In fact, funnily enough, I've had Australian clients or clients of Australian origin, or have one that I work with who is originally from Australia but lives in London. And amazingly, I also have a client who's from London who's in Australia, in Melbourne. And this lady that I've been working with is in America. So this isn't something unique to the UK. And by the way, if you're interested in exploring mentoring, I should mention that you can find out more about it at amazingfba.com/mentoring, M-E-N-T-O-R-I-N-G. So anyway, this lady was exploring something in this sort of passion or wellness niche, if you call it that. It's a more of a passion-led thing, but a bit more vague knowledge, and let's call it essential oil diffuser. So something that is a nice to have, that's quite on trend, but not a must have. We were exploring last week about how to, you know, go into finding a person and a pain or a customer avatar and define very clearly, not just worry about keywords, which everybody does and which you should do. Of course, you should do your keyword research on Amazon using your favorite tool, Jungle Scout, possibly Viral Launch, Helium 10. By the way, we are going to have somebody from Helium 10 on, probably get people more than once back from that. But we're going to start with some Helium 10 guys to tell us how that's used for product research and other basic functions for people who are just starting out. So for sure, you've got to know about that. And that's not enough. I absolutely firmly believe that you've got to find a person and have them in mind very, very clearly, a person and a pain, a person who has a particular need that you're trying to meet with your product. And only then can you really fine-tune your product to a particular need and cut through the noise by being better at understanding your customer than anybody else, as opposed to trying to produce more widgets than anyone else for a lower cost, because you're never going to beat the Chinese factories that way. Okay, so that's the background to this discussion. So over the course of the week, she was doing some research on the person and pain. For me, it was a little bit vague. She was talking about women in their 50s in certain types of professions who she felt had a need for this wellness stuff, including things like essential oil diffusers, not the real name. And it turned out that was a little bit unreliable, in terms she did some digging around at my invitation to dig around online at various social type things like Facebook, Reddit, Instagram, just to get a flavor of what sort of things people of that ilk, that kind of person, was really actually interested in. Were there any clues in the marketplace that people were discussing this stuff and buying products and generally passionate about this type of product? Was there a match between what she thought was a person and a pain and what they actually do? And the truth is, it emerged that she didn't really get any convincing things from that, and it didn't look like, you know, these smart professional women were into this product. And also she explored trying to then kind of reverse engineer from that product that she was interested in into the sort of person that might buy it, and ended up with a very rather vague sounding customer avatar, right? That sounds a bit critical, and vague is sometimes the prelude to precise, and that's okay. That's part of the journey of developing your ideas, and that's important. But here's what struck me this week. We had a chat about, you know, her time. You said, so ask a simple question, which is, what do you do with the rest of your time during the week? And it emerged that there's she's busy dealing with medical issues within her family, without revealing too much, but she's basically become a sort of mega consumer herself of physical products to do with a medical condition she's helping a member of the family with. Let's call it arthritis, and let's say that the type of product she's getting is arthritis wrist magnet bracelet, which, again, I've changed the name to protect the innocent. That's not what it is, right? But what was striking to me is that the person and the pain that she was dealing with were very, very clear. The person, for starters, is this family member, so she knows exactly who it is. She doesn't have to construct an imaginary customer avatar. They're living, you know, in a house. The second thing is that the pain is very, very clear. It's a specific physical ailment which brings particular things with it. Let's pretend it's arthritis, which it isn't, but just to protect privacy. And with the product, she had a real deep expertise from the point of view of a consumer, because she was buying tons of the stuff in an attempt to solve this medical problem and was experimenting with, you know, particular types of products seemed to be the right kind of thing, but they weren't really working that well. So she was thinking already of very, in response to a very, very clear, practical, indeed pressing pain, she was wanting to create very specific innovations to make this product work better. And I'm not going to tell you exactly what they are. That was so striking to me, just that she was in the middle of a massive potential opportunity. She was saying basically this problem caused by the quotes arthritis caused a problem that none of the products that she had bought really solved well. And that really struck me. I said, hello, as an Australian teacher friend of mine used to say, hello, you know, you're looking at a gap between what people need and really desperately need in this case for pain relief and a product. And I said, look, this is for, you know, aging people. I think we can reveal that much. And this is an endemic type of problem, like arthritis or like diabetes or like, which it isn't. But these are problems that affect millions and millions and millions of people. They are growing because they are partly connected with aging in some cases. And aging and illness obviously are connected. And guess what? The entire population of a lot of the planet, including China, which is just a mega massive, what do you call it? What's the word? Demographic time bomb waiting to happen. I mean, it's already happening because of the one-child policy back in the 80s and 90s. By the way, Japan, Western Europe, and to some extent the USA all have an out-of-whack pyramid, population pyramid, which means that there's lots and lots of older people. The UK passed a few years ago the point where there are more people over the age of 65 than under the age of 16. So if you want a general hint out of this, look for products that serve older people because they're just underserved. And if you just flip through your average Amazon product selection, and again, here's a major hint if you want just a tactical way of looking at it, look at the customers' pictures. They're nearly always younger men and women. Occasionally somebody has somebody older looking. Guess what? That is fine. You can make millions and billions in those markets. But guess what? There is an underserved market of people whose needs in terms of medical and mobility and stuff are only going to get bigger and bigger. And that's the older market. So just a generalized hint there. But that's not the main point I'm making. By the way, I don't feel like I'm encroaching on my client space by saying that because there are hundreds of millions of aging people in the Western world. So Japan, America, Europe, which is where most of the main Amazon marketplaces are, not to mention China. India, of course, different structure, but that's a very difficult Amazon marketplace to sell into anyway, so not relevant. So this is fascinating to me because this is, we had almost a bit of a, not of a fight, but we had a prior discussion between the ideas that she really was kind of a bit in love with, her ideas that she'd been exploring for ages around this passion product that was around wellness, the essential oil diffuser, which, as you can tell, as opposed to something that deals directly with arthritis, is more of a like to have or want to have than a must have, more of a sort of something motivated by a wish that's a bit less powerful than an absolute strong pain and a really driving need to find a solution. So what was interesting to me is this idea of when you, oh, first of all, let's deal with this, the idea of sticking with things versus letting go, or rather when to stay and when to move on. So let's put it another way. My client, like so many of my clients, is in the middle of something that she's become very expert at by being a consumer. And by the way, she has a sort of professional background in caring for people as well, but a sort of medical type background. And I've worked with other people before and doctors who are experts at these things, and they start going on about effectively fidget spinners or whatever the latest trend is. And I go, okay, sure, if that works, you can sell anything you want, it's your business. And tell me, why is it that you're ignoring the expertise that you built over 20 years in an area as, say, a doctor or whatever it is? And I'm not talking about being stuck in your day job. I'm talking about not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. In other words, you can leave your day job as a, you know, a lawyer or a doctor, or in my case, a musician, music teacher. That doesn't mean you have to throw away all the knowledge and expertise in particular types of products that you've accumulated over one or two or three or more decades in that area. And it always fascinates me how quick people are to do that. So one thing I would say is, if you want a hint about where to start with your product research, if you're new, or if you're wanting to take a second bite at the cherry, you haven't had some mediocre products, but nothing that was really outstanding, and many of my products would have fallen into that category as well, start with what you are really involved in and what you actually, you've got a pain that you're trying to solve, and you really are trying to get the, you know, an optimum solution to, and that you've tried a lot of stuff and it just doesn't really quite tick that box, and you're looking for something that's going to solve that pain. And my classic example, which I may yet do, is podcast microphones. I think electronics are a problematic area, so I would not suggest, I'm not worried about competition by saying this, because I would not suggest to anyone that they go into electronics if they're new to the game. And they're problematic, but, you know, I'm using podcast microphones. I'm getting obsessed now with the problem of getting a really great audio quality. Now, for me, that's not a must-have, but a somewhat like to have. But nevertheless, I'm in that. I'm buying the stuff. I just bought some new audio equipment yesterday, and I'm a bit obsessed. So that is always a clue, if you are in that situation, to be your own best customer. And just start there and really dig deep in that. There's always going to be things there that you understand. And sometimes you can find there's a gap between supply and demand. I mean, microphones a bit difficult, because that's a little bit hugely competitive. And I'm not sure there's really a gap between supply and demand. That's probably, I just haven't looked hard enough to find the perfect microphone. But if you look hard and you just can't find a solution, that's always a major, major hint that you could be onto an absolute winner market. And you don't know yet, it's early days, but that's a very, very good starting point. And you may as well, at least on paper, have a powerful starting point. It's much like higher odds for success than something that you kind of don't know very well, that is a bit me too. There's a lot of products out there, they're all quite good quality, and there's not really a need for another product. Guess what? You know, there isn't a need for another product. You probably won't be rewarded with any profits by the marketplace. Now, this is a fascinating, because this brings me to the question of, then when do you follow through on things and when do you let go? So one extreme that people often go to is they completely junk their history and any expertise they have in an area of pain or passion and the products that go with it. And we've already just talked about that. Doctors who ignore their ability to deal with certain diseases, people who've worked in other medical fields and have an ill person at home or have been ill themselves, who ignore all the expertise they gain there. The flip side of that is falling in love with your ideas, and this is where the sunk cost fallacy comes in, because the flip side of being really in love with your, of valuing your own expertise or undervaluing it is overvaluing your own ideas and sometimes your money. And the sunk cost thing is very, very simple and very powerful. I'm going to probably talk about it again because it's so fundamental. But here's the nutshell of it. The sunk cost fallacy says it doesn't make any difference whether you spent 3 years and £30,000 or dollars of your own money on a product or 3 minutes. What matters is whether it's a good product to sell right now, right now. And the past actually doesn't make any difference to the current reality. It's totally irrelevant. And it's very easy to look at things through a very skewed, apparently even mice do this, but it's a human and animal thing to get very attached to when we put money, time or effort or emotion into something, to associate, to assume that that gives that thing, that product or that service or that, you know, relationship or that, you know, set of concert tickets or anything, it gives that value. And maybe in the wider scheme of things, in some esoteric way, that's true. The trouble, and emotionally, that feels true. The trouble is, from a business point of view, it's absolute rubbish. It is completely, demonstrably, simply wrong. So if you want to actually make money, you absolutely have to be willing to completely junk, not immediately, not carelessly, but completely junk, if necessary, any ideas you've spent months researching, any products you spent tens of thousands developing or buying, anything you spent ages creating web pages for, creating marketing for, anything you like. And this is one of the hardest things in the world to do, because it's an emotional discipline. It is not an intellectual discipline. But I can't tell you how important I've seen it to be between the people that I've worked with who just absolutely completely fail to move forward because they're going round in circles and obsess about something where there's not any evidence in hard terms that they're going to actually make any money. And you know what? Guess what? If you think there's something to be made in a market, then spend some money and see if it is. Test it. Yeah. So that's the way, by the way, the way out of the dilemma of should I stay or should I go is test it. Right. Which is one of the fundamental things that I work on in the PLP course, which is right from the very beginning with the product research process that I advocate, is apart from finding a person and a pain and really focusing in on that, is come up with lots of ideas and then dismiss them. Go, 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 go. Just kill your babies. Not the babies, but kill the micro ideas that you have. And you come up with an idea, you get excited, you think it's going to be cool, and then you look at the numbers and you go, no, it isn't. And you need to be very good at letting go of ideas. That's at that end of the process. And the PLP course has got 20 modules. It's a very thorough course, but at the end of module 18 is basically... module 18 is about reviewing your private label launch. And one of the fundamental starting questions for that is, should I stay or should I go? Is this a success? Should I build on it? Is it a question mark or is it just a no? And one of the most important ways to be successful is to let go of products that are not successful and are not going to become successful. Now, there's no 100% certain way of saying that. That's the brain, the mind F, if you get one rude word there. That's the mind, you know, conundrum. But nevertheless, that is one of the arts of business, is knowing when to let go. And there is no perfect time to know that. Hindsight's 20/20 vision, but you can't know that at the time, but you can get better at making that judgment call. But you have to have the emotional discipline to follow through on your judgment call. If your gut's telling you, and the numbers are telling you, the market through the marketplace, through the numbers is telling you, this is not a good product to sell, stop selling it. You have to have the discipline to stop selling it. Whether you've spent 10 months or 10 years developing it, whether you spent £10 or $10,000, it doesn't make any difference. If the marketplace says yes, go with it. If the marketplace says no, then stop. And that is the ultimate discipline. And I've really, really seen how, on the one hand, people get completely stuck and never move forward from even the ideas stage, never even buy samples, never mind order any product to sell in any bulk, versus the people who are potentially lose tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars, but make a million the other side of that, because they have the discipline of letting go of the stuff they need to let go of and focusing their money, energy and time on the stuff that is going to really reward them. And that is the hardest discipline in the world. But guess what? If you just keep practicing it, you'll get better at it. And I do think, I'm not a life coach, but I think it is just a life skill, period. I think it applies to relationships, to ideas, to religion, to anything you like, that it doesn't serve you anymore. It doesn't matter how much money, emotion, time, energy, or years you've sunk into that thing. If it isn't right, it isn't right. And whatever you've spent on it, money, time, effort, is irrelevant. And it's so hard to prize your emotions and your thinking away from that. But once you begin to do that, I promise you, everything starts to fall into place. And I can't tell you enough how important a discipline this is, particularly for people who are new, that the difference between a future entrepreneur and a wannapreneur, this is really right up there with those different characteristics. So hopefully that was helpful. As I said, it's arisen from my actual mentoring work. If you're interested in working with me one-to-one, at the moment I am offering outrageous deals. I very, very rarely offer reductions in mentoring because I don't want to devalue my time. But I'm pushing, frankly, to pay quite a big tax bill because it's been a good year before now. But unfortunately, that means I've got a bigger tax bill than I've had in the past. So that means I want to bring some cash in quickly. That's frankly why I'm doing it. But also, I want to get the word out and work with more people because I enjoy it. And I want to get some great winning stories under my belt and some amazing testimonials, not just testimonials, but whole case studies. So because of that, I'm willing to do substantial reductions. So get over to amazingfba.com/mentoring, M-E-N-T-O-R-I-N-G. Like all these things, mentoring is very intensive work. I enjoy it, but I cannot have more than a handful of clients, maybe maximum 10. So once I've got the next few clients under my belt and in place and regularly, you know, working with me, then the price is going to go back to standard price and even potentially go up as demand goes up for my services. So if you want to work with me at an affordable level, if you've been thinking about working with an e-commerce coach, now is an amazing opportunity. AmazingFBA.com/mentoring, M-E-N-T-O-R-I-N-G. And if you want to check out the PLP course, I'll be doing a relaunch of that soon. It's not publicly available yet, but it will be sort of late January, early February. And in the meantime, thank you so much for listening. Hope that was thought-provoking in a helpful way. And I will speak to you in the next show. Mike out. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn, The Critical Few. Then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.